Hi everyone, welcome to Aha with Alistair. I'm Alistair Willis, the music director of the South Bend Symphony Orchestra. Our second Jack M. Champagne Masterworks concert of our 2024-25 season features two iconic pieces, Brahms' Third Symphony and Tchaikovsky's Violin Concerto. I heard both pieces for the first time in my late teens and was struck by their beauty and bravura. I studied them a little at university, but my first intense and in-depth study of them was in 1999 as a conducting fellow at Tanglewood, the summer home of the Boston Symphony Orchestra. The then BSO music director, Seiji Ozawa, led the Tanglewood Music Center Orchestra through Brahms' Third Symphony, and the conducting fellows, including me, waited on his every word and gesture. How he put it together, how he explained it to the orchestra, made a profound impact on me. It's my favorite of Brahms' four symphonies, and I've never really understood why it's the least performed, perhaps because it's the hardest of his symphonies to play and to conduct, but none of them are what you might call easy. Well, Brahms, in October 1883, played the first and last movements of his Third Symphony on the piano for Antonin Dvorak. Dvorak wrote to a friend, "I say, without exaggerating, that this work surpasses his first two symphonies, if not perhaps in grandeur and powerful conception, then certainly in beauty." And of Brahms' four symphonies, the third is unique, as it contains a personal musical motto. He may have been inspired to do this upon learning that his friend, the Hungarian violinist Josef Joachim, had a musical motto. Joachim's motto was the notes F-A-E, standing for Frei, aber einsam, free but lonely. Brahms, as a 50-year-old bachelor, declared himself Frei, aber froh, free but happy, with the notes F, A flat, F. This motto can be heard throughout the symphony, and most clearly at the very beginning. And there they were, F, A flat, F. Here's another example. First the French horn, and then the oboe. The second movement is the traditional slow movement. It begins with a simple yet beautiful clarinet melody. I've always found third movements particularly fascinating. As we know, third movements began with Haydn and Mozart as minuets. Beethoven added his personal touch by changing them to scherzos, faster versions of minuets, still having three beats in the bar. Brahms, in his first symphony, did away with the minuet or scherzo idea and composed his third movement with two beats to the bar. Quite the surprise. And in his second symphony, produced a hybrid of two beats and three beats to the bar. So what on earth were we to expect in the third symphony? Let's find out. ¶¶ There are three beats in a bar, but it's not a minuet or a scherzo. Could it be a second slow movement? Brahms creates something new, a slower, unique kind of third movement, which is intensely lyrical in character. It is stunningly gorgeous and certainly the heart of the symphony. So having two central slower movements, to me, highlights the faster, more extensive outer movements. And the fourth movement continues to show off Brahms' brilliance as a composer. It begins somewhat mysteriously with the indication for the strings to play not only extremely quietly, but also sotto voce, which literally means under your breath. Movement is full of contrasting melodies and constant development. The influential music critic Edvard Hanslick said, "Many music lovers will prefer the titanic force of the first symphony, others the troubled charm of the second, but the third strikes me as being artistically the most nearly perfect." End quote. What makes it unique among his symphonies is that it ends quietly. Well, this to me feels natural from the progression of the previous movements, but a quiet ending to a symphony or a concert is a very special shared moment in the concert hall and can be extraordinarily powerful. I can think of only two other major symphonies that ended quietly before 1883. Haydn's Farewell Symphony, where the players leave the stage one by one, and Beethoven's Pastoral Symphony. This means, of course, that the vast majority of symphonies ever composed end loudly. And who doesn't love experiencing the full force and unleashed power of an orchestra to end a concert? It's what we've been programmed to expect. And this is why we often see Brahms' third in the first half of a concert, in order to leave room for a piece that ends louder, which is what we'll be doing in our concert with Tchaikovsky's Violin Concerto. My first in-depth study of Tchaikovsky's Violin Concerto was also at Tanglewood, where I discovered firsthand how notoriously challenging it can be to conduct. Our conducting mentor, Robert Spano, brought in the extraordinary violinist Laura Chen. Laura's job was to play the first movement of the concerto for each of the eight conducting fellows, and each time differently. That afternoon, she essentially put us through our paces, kept us on our toes, and provided the most fantastic learning experience, one that set me up well for future performances. Well, it's one thing to conduct, but nothing like the challenge of actually playing it. And our soloist will be the extraordinary American violinist Benjamin Beilman, who soloed with top orchestras like Chicago Symphony, London Symphony, and even with the Berlin Philharmonic on their America tour a couple of months ago. The concerto is unbelievably virtuosic and has become one of the most beloved concertos in the repertoire, though it didn't start out that way. In 1881, unlike Brahms, Tchaikovsky was neither free, happy, nor a bachelor. He composed his violin concerto as he recovered from the fallout of his ill-fated marriage. Its first dedicatee, violinist Leopold Auer, refused to play it, as he considered it, quote, unsuitable to the character of the instrument. The first performance was eventually given by Adolf Brodsky, and the reaction was mixed. The critic Edvard Hanslick was also at that premiere, and called it, quote, long and pretentious, that the violin was not played, but beaten black and blue. And he labeled the last movement odorously Russian, end quote. Hanslick's review didn't stop there. He had a go at Tchaikovsky himself, and he wrote, quote, the Russian composer is surely no ordinary talent, but rather an inflated one, obsessed with posturing as a man of genius and lacking of all discrimination and taste." End quote. Tchaikovsky cut out the review and literally carried the critic's words in his pocket for several months, becoming very depressed. The concerto's future seemed catastrophic. Things started looking up a few months later when Adolf Brodsky premiered the work in Vienna and wrote, "One can play the concerto again and again and never be bored, and this repetition is a most important circumstance for conquering its difficulties." End quote. The concerto was revived. Now, Tchaikovsky, simply put, was forward-thinking. Like many other composers in history, he initiated new technical abilities and expertise from the performer, and these demands were not impossible. Ultimately, as violinists improved, Tchaikovsky's work has become one of the great showpieces in violin repertoire. One critic wrote, "Its fanciful gypsy-like tunes, his trademark colorful Russian orchestration and pyrotechnics make it a timeless thriller." I love that. And for his timeless thriller, Tchaikovsky chose the classical form of three movements. First and third are fast, and the middle movement is slow. There's the usual cadenza, and so Tchaikovsky doesn't rock the boat regarding form. And one of the great curiosities for me is the opening, the unpretentious orchestral introduction. Now, traditionally, the beginning of a concerto is the time where the orchestra sets the scene, sets the tone for the soloist, introduces themes and character. The opening moments. Yet what's wild is that we never hear that music again. The soloist enters with a calm flourish, which to me sounds a bit like a morning stretch, before launching into an unassuming melody. From here, the movement, as we know, becomes increasingly virtuosic, with hardly a moment for the soloist to rest. The second movement is a canzonetta, a small, slow, quiet song, with delicious interplay between the violin, the flute, and the clarinet. It transitions into the third movement, taking the energy and acrobatics to a whole nother level. It's an exciting, frenetic ride with the soloist front and center, navigating perilous scales, double stops, dangerous leaps with blazing speed and accuracy. The effect is undeniably stunning and brings audiences to their feet. Critic Michael Steinberg concluded that, although Tchaikovsky could not please Dr. Hanslick, he has no trouble at all winning us over. We hope that pairing Brahms and Tchaikovsky together in concert brings fresh perspective to their masterpieces, despite the fact that they were not admirers of each other's music. 5 years after the premiere of his violin concerto, Tchaikovsky went on a tour of Western Europe and heard some of Brahms' music. In his tour diary, Tchaikovsky wrote, "I deeply revere the artistic personality of Brahms, but I do not care for his music." He went on, "A few years ago, when I frankly expressed my opinion of Brahms to pianist conductor Hans von Bülow, Bülow replied, 'Wait a minute. The time will come when you will enter into the depth and beauty of Brahms. Like you, it was long before I understood him, but gradually I was blessed by the revelation of his genius. It will be the same with you.'" Tchaikovsky continues. And still I wait, but the revelation tarries. 2 years later, they met again in Hamburg, where Tchaikovsky was conducting his Fifth Symphony. After the concert, Brahms invited Tchaikovsky to dinner, during which they enjoyed each other's company, even though Brahms admitted that he didn't care for the symphony, and Tchaikovsky revealed that he'd never warmed to Brahms' music. Agreeing to disagree, as it were, they apparently parted as friends, but would never meet again. Come and hear their reunion in our concert on February the 15th with the South Bend Symphony Orchestra and Benjamin Beilman. We look forward to seeing you there, and thanks for listening to Aha with Alistair on WVPE.org.